So here I am talking with Steve Denning, and we're going to be looking at the work that is his latest work, which he'll be showcasing at the Smithsonian Storytelling Event this April 15th through the 17th, 2010 in Washington, D.C. And if you decide from listening to this that you want to register for that event, the best place to go is Steve's website, which is stevedenning.com, stevedenning.com, and in the right-hand column you'll see a link to all the registration and more information on the seminar. So, Steve, tell us what you're going to be talking about this year.
Well, let me tell you how I got into the subject. Because a couple of years ago, I started looking around the world and seeing that most people in their workplace were not very happy. They were not particularly motivated. I mean, studies show that only 20% of the workforce globally is fully committed to their work. And I started to think, what could be done about that? And because I'd seen that organizations would have islands of excellence, they'd have islands where oases of in the organization where people were excited and innovating, but then those islands or oases would be closed down periodically. So their life expectancy at these places wasn't very high. So I started to think, well, why is that? And so the first surprise I got, I thought, well, it's going to be hard to find places where things are going well, because things are not generally going well at all. But it turned out it wasn't difficult at all to find these places. Pretty much everyone I talked to, when I asked them, do you know or have you ever experienced a time in your life where you were working with others and you were having a ball and it was one for all for one, and you were generating tremendous productivity and you were accomplishing innovation and you were having fun and the people whom you were doing it for were delighted? Have you ever had an experience like that? And I was amazed to find that pretty much everyone had an experience like that in their life. Might not be now, might have been in their work, might have been at school, might have been in their community. That might have been for a long time or might have been quite brief, but pretty much everyone had such an experience. So this was an eye-opener to me. So I suddenly realized that this is not something that's being invented. Everyone knows what I'm talking about when I say it is possible to have those kind of experiences. And so then I started to ask, well, where is this happening now? And I noticed that these experiences, hundreds of people that I'm talking to, unusually large number of people had this experience in software development. And for the longest time, I didn't think anything of this because I thought, well, I'm not going to learn anything from software developers because these are people who got into computing because they didn't like people. So what were they teachers about people? They're geeks. So but eventually I kept running into so many of them that I needed to find out what's going on. And so the next surprise was that I went and found out what was going on, and once I understood the language that they were talking about, it was amazing what was happening. They had actually figured out how to make this happen on a systematic basis, and they were doing it on hundreds of organizations around the world. And so I started to meet the people, meet the leaders who'd invented this different way of interacting and managing, and I took training. I became qualified in the subject, and then started to see how to join the dots together. Because these computer people, not very articulate in explaining what it was they were doing. They're very good at doing it, but they hadn't put it together as a comprehensive and coherent way of managing. And so what tended to happen in an organization, you'd have these wonders being generated in the computer department, and then from time to time they'd actually come in contact with the management of the organization and the effort would be crushed. And so I said, well, look, this is crazy. We need to find a way to convert the whole management to this better way of managing, because it's more productive, it's for the organization, it delights the clients, and it's the people doing the work are having a ball. This is a triple win. So, and it generates rapid innovation. So why shouldn't the whole organization be doing that? So my book is about exactly that. Organizations where, not in software development, but across the whole organization is being run in this way. And so it's a kind of an evolution of what these organizations were doing. And it begins by actually focusing on the goal. The goal is to delight customers, delight clients, not just satisfy them, not just turn them into passive purchases of your services, but to actually thrill them so that they become raving fans, they become passionate supporters of your organization because you've thrilled them and done something to excite them by what you've done. And that's a radically different goal from traditional management, which is basically about producing goods and services or making money or at best satisfying customers. So it's a fundamental shift, because that goal of producing goods and services is basically a simple, linear, straightforward goal that can be accomplished 100% of the time. Delighting clients is complex and mysterious and something that is unpredictable, because you don't know what in advance what is going to delight clients. So you're trying to unravel a mystery. And so it's a much more difficult task, a task in which once you set yourself to do it, you're going to fail at this. You have to, because it's more difficult, you know you're going to fail some of the time, and you set yourself up to deal with failure. And you realize that in order to delight clients, you're going to have to innovate. You're not going to be able to do business as usual. You're going to have to keep generating new ideas, what was good enough yesterday is not going to be good enough tomorrow. So how do you innovate on a consistent basis? Well, a lot of evidence showing that self-organizing teams are the best way to organize continuous innovation. So self-organizing teams becomes the way you structure the work, and you work in iterations, client-driven iterations, cycles, so that you can see at the end of each short cycle whether in fact the team is generating delight. And if it's not generating delight, if you fail, then to learn from failure. So it's about facing up to failure early and often, so that you can produce success, and being radically more open. This is not like the traditional organization, where if you raise a problem you get hit on the head, or even like the learning organization where you get rewarded if you provide a solution to a problem. This is being required to identify problems, required to point out problems even before a solution has come. Because then if you don't find problems, they will turn into much bigger problems. And so finding the problem so that you can solve it becomes critical. In the traditional management, that didn't really matter. In traditional management, because you were dealing with a finite goal, in a simple linear task, produce so many goods and services, you could expect 100% success. And so the dynamic of traditional management is there will be no failure in this organization. Anyone who fails, anyone who makes a mistake will be punished. And that makes sense if that's your goal, simply produce a service. You're not trying to, and it is possible to optimize and set things up in such a way as that for most of the time you've got. Once you raise your sights and take on this larger goal of delighting clients, you know you're going to fail some of the time. You know it's a much more difficult thing. And so you have to be more open. You cannot delight clients unless you're really sharing the best intelligence with everyone in the organization as to what is involved in that, what kind of what's going on in the minds of clients. So it's a wholly different level of frankness and transparency that exists in organizations, and not simply having exhortations to manage in this way, but different practices. One of the most powerful practices is the daily stand-up meeting. So every day, 15 minutes, the team gets together and share with each other the answer to three questions. What did I do yesterday? What am I going to do today? And what impediments am I facing? What you find when you do that consistently over a period, there is nowhere to hide. Everyone knows everything. Everyone knows what you were doing. You know everything about what other people are doing. You know what's bothering them. And it provides a framework where you can start to realize that something I'm doing is causing a problem for someone else, or some problem that someone else has, I have a solution to that can save them time. And one starts to see this group could work at a higher level. And because you start to see the world through the eyes of the team, you start to see the world in a broader way. You're not just looking at the world with your own eyes, you're starting to see the world with a whole set of different eyes. And so you have a broader understanding of what's going on in the world and a greater capacity to solve problems by doing it. And so moving on to having continuous improvement as the inevitable dynamic. If you're going to continuously delight people, you have to continuously innovate. And throughout all of this, communicating in an interactive way through stories, through questions, through conversations, it's these principles which create this different kind of environment which, as I say, has this triple win. It delights clients, it's more fun to work in, and it's more productive for the organization. So it's a very exciting, very ambitious set of ideas, but one that I think is inevitable. It will happen. I hope with my book will make it happen sooner. But it will happen, any of it, whether my book makes it happen. It's simply a better way to run organizations.
And so tell me about the connection of story to that. How did this spring from your interest in storytelling, and why is this appropriate for a conference on storytelling?
Well, one of the things was that when I looked around a couple of years ago, looked back over my work of the previous decade, let's say, and saw that I'd had great success in organizations in training people on storytelling and creating leaders who knew how to tell stories. And they had created oases of excellence in many organizations around the world. But when I asked myself, well, had this become part of the mainstream of those organizations? I said, for the most part, no. And often, in fact, these oases of excellence would be periodically closed down by the management, and they would go through some kind of reorganization. And it seemed as though storytelling was at odds with the culture of traditional management. So this was one of the things that prompted me to say, well, there must be something wrong here. It's not wrong, something wrong with storytelling, it's something wrong with management. So what is it? Because it wasn't just storytelling, it was also innovation. You'd see groups that were highly innovative and they'd be producing wonders and they'd be closed down. Why was that? And you'd be finding many of the creative things that were happening in organizations, it would be like whack-a-mole. And the management would come along and say, look, what you're doing is out of line with the way this organization functions, and it would be closed down. So storytelling was a big one of those things that would be whacked, but it wasn't the only one. And so I started to think, well, why is this? Let's try to find the examples where this isn't happening, and then see whether we can't reverse engineer the whole organization so it runs like this. So the oasis becomes the organization, and we make traditional management extinct.
So if people come to this conference in Washington, D.C., are they going to find out how to do this?
This will be obviously discussed, but it is a complex set of ideas that will be an appetizer, will be an introduction to a subject, and there'll be further workshops that you and I will be holding in May and later on in the year, where people can come and spend a couple of days and really learn what it's about. Because there are, basically seven fundamental principles and then 70 practices. So it's not something that you can master in 10 minutes, but you can get the gist of it quite rapidly. But to get to the point where you could actually implement this, obviously takes some more time to understand what those 70 practices are and how they fit together and how they relate to the seven principles. Because the principles are more important than the practices. If you're understanding and implementing the seven principles, you're well on your way doing what I call radical management. But the more you know about the practices, the more robust, the more sustained the effort is likely to be.
And when did your book come out?
In November 2010.
And the name of the book again?
It's The Leader's Guide to Radical Management, Reinventing the Workplace for the 21st Century.
Thank you for your time today, Steve.